of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Petitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Welcome to In the Narthex, a radio program of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand. I'm your host, Father Pavlos Petitsis of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, located in lovely Western Springs here in Auckland. It's a blessing to be with you again today on the radio. Some of you know I was away for many weeks visiting in the United States. And on that trip in the United States, I had the opportunity to visit with John Maddox of Ancient Faith Ministries. And if you've never heard of Ancient Faith Ministries, it's certainly worth your time to go to www.ancientfaith.com and to see what it is that they are doing there. It's a tremendous website with a plethora of programs of every type that explain the Orthodox faith and entertain as well. And I think anyone of a modest interest would find it engaging. So I want to do that as a shout-out first to John Maddox and to his wife for welcoming us to their brand-new studio. We had a wonderful visit with them there in Indiana and not too far from Chicago. And then I had a wonderful opportunity to be interviewed by John. That interview in its totality is available on ancientfaith.com. Here today, we're going to share with you a portion of that interview.
All right, this is John Maddox, and a special treat. It's not often that we get to talk to someone from New Zealand, but today we're going to learn about a mission in New Zealand for the Orthodox Church that is part of the Orthodox Christian Mission Center, because we're talking today with Father Paul Petitsis. We met you first, Father Paul, in Northern Ohio, right?
Yes, that's right. You came to our parish at St. Demetrius in Rocky River.
That was really, really fun, and I can remember meeting your family at that time, but never guessing that you'd end up in New Zealand.
Well,
you probably didn't either.
We didn't either.
Yeah, so we want to hear that story. But tell us a little bit about yourself and your family first.
Well, I'm blessed. I have a beautiful presbytera who loves the Lord deeply, and she's been a big help to me in my ministry over these years. But now, especially as we're serving in New Zealand, we don't have the same infrastructure that you might have in a parish in the United States. So she's often my chanter. Of course, she's baking the holy breads. She's helping me in other ways, too, with Bible studies and talking with parishioners and comforting them. So we have my presbytera. We have my two daughters. One has now gone on to be a nun since we started our work there. So she's helping us. She's not formally a missionary, but she's a big part of the team because she prays for us deeply. And her name is Sister Philothea. And then we have our oldest daughter, Nicolia, who just got married, and with her husband, Gregory. And so they're going to be coming, hopefully soon, back to New Zealand and living in Auckland with us and starting their new life as newlyweds. And then we have our son, Georgios. He's just 16 years old, and he's a beautiful young man and very devout himself. All of the children, thank God, love the Lord. And we're hoping to see their lives in some ways to benefit the church, whatever they decide to do. I'm sure it can all be good, but as their daddy, I want to make sure they serve the church.
Well, the last time we saw your family was in this Chicago area when you and your family came and visited us, and yes, we went downtown, and I think we enjoyed a stuffed Chicago pizza.
Absolutely.
Together.
Absolutely. I can't believe I haven't had one yet, but I'm looking forward to that. That was lovely. Who knows?
There's time. Yes. Well, so let's get to the story about how you ended up in New Zealand. I mean, I'm not surprised, first of all, that you, because I knew early on of your evangelistic zeal and your mind for reaching out to people. So it doesn't surprise me that you're a missionary now. But how did that come about?
Very kind of you to say. Well, I think my presbytera had a big part in it. We knew a very holy man by the name of Amphilochios Tsoukos. He was an archimandrite when we met him. In other words, he was called Father Amphilochios. And he was known as a Yeronda, which is a rare title that's given to people who have certain spiritual gifts. It's not a title that is acquired easily, but anyway, he had that title. And he had started two monasteries in Rhodes, in the island of Rhodes, a men's monastery called Thari, dedicated to Archangel Michael, and another women's monastery called Ipseni, dedicated to the Dormition of the Theotokos. So this beautiful man had a wonderful outreach. He's an evangelist, really. When the war was going on in Bosnia, he was bringing Serbian young boys to come and have a summer camp experience at his monastery. So they set up they built a whole wing just so the boys could have a place to stay. And they brought in staff from Serbia. Anyway, my daughters and my wife stayed with him for 1 week, one summer. And now the one daughter is still living in that same area. She became a nun there, and at the women's monastery. And then my wife had a sense of his spiritual blessings, his spiritual charismata, as we say in Greek, his graces that come to him. So when she had a chance to visit the Australian New Zealand area back in 2008 or 2009, she said, I'd like to stop on my way to visit this archbishop. Do I have your support? I said, of course. So she went, and she saw what he was doing. Now he had been made the Metropolitan of New Zealand.
Okay.
In 2005, he became the Metropolitan of New Zealand. So he left behind the monasteries he started in Rhodes, and he left them to other people to care for. And he came to New Zealand to start his ministry. So when she got there, they had just bought land for a monastery in Levin, New Zealand. And so she was there just at the beginning days. They had just bought the property, had just come into their hands. So they were clearing weeds, and my wife got bit by so many sandflies, she couldn't believe she scratched for weeks. But after that, she said, we have to go and help him once a year for at least a month. And she knew that I had a love for missions. And so it was sort of like she gave me an anniversary gift. She said, we're going to go do missions. I'm like, wow, that's great. My wife wants to do missions. So I was excited by the opportunity because, you know, to get my wife and my children to go to Africa or to go to some other place that maybe the conditions of life are a little harder wasn't going to be a very easy sell. But New Zealand is a very modern country. It's a first world country, I guess you'd say. But nonetheless, there's plenty of work to do there. So I jumped at the opportunity. We went for 1 month. 2 weeks we were in Auckland and Wellington. 2 weeks we were in Fiji with the Archbishop. And the first 2 weeks were the weeks in Fiji. And when I saw the Archbishop after these many years, I hadn't seen him in some years. And he was wearing a straw hat and his collar was open. And he looked, you know, he's being beaten up by the weather there. But he greeted me with that beautiful Fijian expression, Bula. And I greeted him back, Bula, you know, which just means hello, but it's a very happy greeting of hello. And I thought, who is this man? He has so much love in him. It just beams out of him. So that experience, that same time we were there, many different things happened, but I can't tell all of them. But what happened at one point is he said to me, I've got it. You're going to come here and serve the parish in Auckland and be my priest there. Because the priest who was there in Auckland at that time was leaving to go back to the United States.
What was your first reaction when he told you that? I mean, deep inside, what were you thinking?
Well, he had somehow prepped me. That's the part I haven't told you. So when I first saw him in Fiji, he was planting little seeds, I guess spiritual seeds. So when he got to the point of saying that to me, I was like, yes, I've got to do this, you know. And I did really feel from the time I saw him in Fiji that God was calling me. And it was hard for my parish back. We were living in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the time. And they weren't very happy with me that I left. And I can only apologize to them because they offered me every good thing. I had no reason to leave them. They were excellent, and they are an excellent parish. But you don't go to do missionary work because you're going to go to a better situation.
Right, right.
You know, so I accepted to go, and I haven't regretted it. There have been some difficult challenges. But really, it was seeing the charismatic presence of the Archbishop, I think, that was the biggest drive.
What year was this that you went?
We went for our first visit in 2009, and then we went to stay in 2010. We arrived November 30th, St. Andrew Day, the feast of the Holy Apostle Andrew, who is the patron saint of our metropolis in New Zealand. So it was kind of a nice gift from God that we could arrive on that day in New Zealand.
And how did you link up with OCMC in order to make this one of their missions?
Well, you have to imagine it was a growing edge for them as it was for us. They didn't initially think of New Zealand as a mission field because it is a first world country, and their pattern up to that time had been serving places that are more remote and, you know, I don't know if the right word is exotic, but anyway, not first world countries generally. Mm-hmm. So the thought was, well, are you really doing a mission there? Or are you just a parish priest for a little church? But I think over time, they started to see that something real was happening there. And then the clincher was that Father Martin himself came out, and he saw Father Martin Ritzy, God bless him and grant him many years. He came out to meet our archbishop, to see our work in New Zealand, and then he was able to take that message back to the people of OCMC and say, yes, indeed, it is a mission. And I think really it was a little bit of them courting us and us courting them, and finally there was a common mind, and we said, okay, we can do this. We'll be a missionary supported by OCMC. Because up until that time, we had been supported by, anyway, we're always supported by God's grace, but not by any organization.
Okay.
But just by individuals who cared enough to help.
So the region of the world we're talking about is referred to as Oceania, and I'm just learning this today. So
yes,
help our listeners understand the geography there.
Well, you said that very well, Oceania. You have to imagine the Pacific Ocean is huge, of course, but Oceania refers to that area. Some people call it the Pacific nations. But we don't generally include Australia in that, only because Australia is so large it doesn't need a special name.
Yeah, right.
So, but New Zealand is kind of small in comparison to Australia, and those other islands are much, much smaller still. But one of the reasons, the other reason they link them is because they share common Pacific culture. The Maori of New Zealand and the Fijians, as well as the Tongans and the Samoans, have similar cultures, not similar language. They have different languages, and they have different cultural practices as well. But they have many things that they share in common. And some of them are linked just by food, for instance. They have similar, they all eat the taro plant, as an example, which is, when it's prepared well, a very tasty starch. Dissimilar from a potato, but anyway, like a potato in terms of being starchy. So, and they have a similar dress that they'll wear and similar dances. So there's a lot of commonalities among them. And they call that area the Oceania of that those Pacific Islanders. And they include in that New Zealand then. There were some Maori that lived in Australia, but I think the predominant culture there is the Aboriginal, which is not a Pacific Island culture. So again, Oceania generally refers to New Zealand and Vanuatu and New Caledonia, and of course, but we don't have parishes in those places, but Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, those are where our archbishop has planted churches.
So when you went down there, this was 2009, how many Orthodox missions or parishes were going?
Well, when we arrived in 2009, it was the summer of 2009, July. The archbishop had, when we got there, we were 2 days late. He had already served the first two liturgies ever in Fiji, the Greek Orthodox liturgies. You know, I'm talking about, there was no Russian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox. There's no other Orthodox presence whatsoever. So he did the first liturgies of St. John Chrysostom 2 days before he got there, the first and the second, and then he asked me to do the third. And we didn't have a church then. We just had a mission building. So we did the liturgy on a dining room table. Of course, you have to be even more careful when you're not serving over an actual altar table. But it all went well, and I gave communion to a man by the name of Bartholomew, who's now Father Bartholomew, and to his wife Lydia, or Lydia, and she's now Presbytera Lydia. So that was how basic things were in 2009. So in 2010, he'd built a little chapel to St. Paris Gavi, and then he kept stretching out. So that was in a place called Sambeto, then they moved on to Saweni. And he established New Ipseni, a monastery reminiscent of his monastery in Greece, Rhodes, dedicated to the Dormition of Theotokos, of course, where my daughter's staying now. And so he established a little convent there. But so he built a parish of like a parish, of the Dormition of the Theotokos. And then later he built grounds for the nuns to stay. And then later a whole new church of Holy Trinity, a very large, I guess you'd say a cathedral, but it hasn't been formally declared a cathedral yet, but a very large church for the local Fijian people, whoever would be coming Orthodox. So by that time, in just a few short years, they had several hundred Orthodox in Fiji. But we hadn't yet gotten to Tonga, and we hadn't yet gotten to Samoa. And His Eminence, when he first came to New Zealand, he traveled to all those islands, and he just looked to see where would God open a door. And the first door was opened for him in Fiji. So, and then some of the first people he met, I mean, there's so many stories to tell, and I don't know how much time we have on the radio, but some of the first people he met, one of the first people he met was a woman by the name of Regina. And she was Indian background, Hindu background. They're the Indo-Fijians in Fiji and also the native Fijians. So this woman was working at just a tourist shop. And she saw the archbishop, and she had this compulsion. She wanted to offer him a glass of water. She just felt a need to care for him, so as she tells it. So she somehow left her workstation, and she brought him a glass of water, which in Fiji is very dangerous. The job market is very competitive, and if you leave your post for any reason, they can easily fire you and put somebody else in that. And very easy, they're going to find someone else to take that job. So she did that, knowing that she's putting her job at risk, but she just felt this compulsion to help him. She became one of our first catechumens. She's now the nun, Melani.
Wow.
And one of her dear friends also became a nun, Anisia. So the two are indigenous nuns. So we have all indigenous clergy, two indigenous nuns in Fiji. In Tonga, we don't yet have an indigenous Tongan priest, but we have an Indo-Fijian priest. Father George is doing a fine job in Tonga. But we are looking for a Tongan to be a first priest for us there. And then in Samoa, we've been blessed to ordain a man who lives some of the year in Auckland, which is how I met him, in Auckland, and some of the year in Samoa, and he is our first Samoan Orthodox priest. Hmm. So his name is Father Ioane. That means John, of course, but they pronounce it in their language, in Samoan language, Ioane.
Okay. So you've talked about missions and parishes and monasteries, but I understand there's also an orphanage?
Yes. One of the first things the Archbishop wanted to do in Fiji was to build an orphanage there, because he saw that there are many, many poor children. And, you know, these are issues that people can debate and argue. There are very few abortions that happen in Fiji, and someone might say, well, that's why you have so many orphans. I'm not going to tell you that's right or wrong. But I think, of course, our church is against abortion, so we're not unhappy that they don't have abortions. We're happy about that. But nonetheless, there are many orphans, and they need a place to be cared for. And so the Archbishop felt hard for them. And, you know, he built a lot of things there, but he built the orphanage with the most excellent materials. He put more money into the orphanage. He wanted to make sure even that they had marble floor. Mm. And there's no building, except for the hotels that have marble floors in Fiji. But he wanted the kids to have the best. Mm. And that's just his nature. He didn't want them to be treated like second-rate in any way. He wanted to give them the very best he could give them. And I'll tell you a little story. One of the boys, he's not an orphan by any means, but one of the boys who was helped, his family was helped by our Archbishop. He's from a family of 10 children. And a beautiful young man. I don't want to say his name because he's still a minor. But he said, he wrote a letter to the Archbishop. I don't think he told the Archbishop through a letter, but somehow it came to the Archbishop in a letter.
Okay.
And he said, you know, I want to be a bishop when I grow up. Mm. And then they asked him, well, why do you want to be a bishop? He says, because I want to build homes for the poor like our bishop does.
Yeah, he's seen that modeled, hasn't he?
Yeah. So he didn't care about the hat and the vestments and whatever.
Yeah.
The beard, you know, which are all beautiful things. I love them and I don't want us to give them up, but he saw something more. And he may be, you know, he's a very good young man, and he's continuing his studies. Actually, two young men are going to go to Greece now, to a religious school in Greece, and to start to prepare themselves to serve the church. So he's old enough now that he can do that. And we're excited. There's some really wonderful things happening there. And many people have helped over the years. One is now, he started out as layman and now he's a monk. Father Petros has done excellent work. And Father Petros is a married man. So his wife also hopes to become a nun. Her name is Andriana. And they have a daughter who's a nun at the same monastery where my daughter is a nun. So whose name is Theoktisti. So it's a very, you know, devoted to the church family. They've served the Archbishop for many, many years, not just in New Zealand, but also in Greece. And but they are kind of paradigmatic of many of the families that serve our archdiocese. People are very selfless. We don't have a lot of support. It's a very secular country that we live in, so not a lot of people make a priority of the church. But those who have come to our aid are so sweet and kind and helpful. And I just think they're just wonderful people, and they should all hopefully get the crowns in heaven for all they've done for the church.
We're talking with Father Paul Petitsas, and Father Paul is an OCMC missionary in the regions or the islands of Oceania. And we don't often hear about mission work in that part of the world, but that's just as much needed as any place else. And it's been very exciting to hear about the work that you're doing. But I'd like to hear more about your specific work you are doing there.
Yes.
Is it primarily as a parish priest,
yes,
or are you traveling? Or?
Well, I guess I do a little bit of everything, but my primary role is a parish priest. But the Archbishop, of course, he doesn't speak English. So although he does speak some words of English, and I think he understands more than he always lets on, but he needs people to be able to translate for him, and he needs people to not only translate the spoken word, but to translate the written word. And and I do a part of that role. And then also another priest monk who is a Serbian, when the bishop was bringing over those boys from Serbia, he came over as a unbaptized person, and now he's a monk of our church.
Oh, wow.
And his name is Father Miletius. He came over to be a camp counselor, and now he's a monk. So he's very, very, and he's an archmandrite. He's a very talented man, and he speaks English fluently too. So together we assist him in those kinds of ways, and also in interacting with the governmental agencies. I've often had to even author legal documents, which is not exactly my forte, but when needed, God sends help. And I've had help even from people in Denver, Colorado. I have a dear compadre who has helped us with some of those legal things. And then I had to play lawyer and make it fit for Samoa when I was writing their documents. So, you know, it's one of those things that you do things because you have to. Not necessarily that you're so good at it, but there's nobody else to do it. And so I've done that kind of work in visiting with the Archbishop these islands as they're just starting out, to be the translator, to help with the, you know, keeping an eye on the funds, or to help establish bank accounts, or help to, you know, register our church with the government, to meet the governmental authorities. Like when we had to meet to establish the orphanage, we had to have a sit down with the very high authorities of the government in Fiji. I think one of them was a cabinet level authority, and to meet with them and somehow, hopefully, to make a positive impression on them that we have good intentions and we will follow good practices when it comes to their children, that their children will be safe and they'll be well cared for, and that we're not going to use our time with them as a proselytism per se. You know, we're not going to force them to become Orthodox Christians. So that's part of my work. And then we also have a radio program.
I'd like for you to hone in on the need in terms of what kind of support do you need? How do people find out more information about what you're doing? And then if they wanted to participate, how would they go about doing that?
Well, because we have now an orphanage and we have also a battered women's shelter in Fiji, and we're also building churches in Tonga and Samoa. In Tonga to St. George, in Samoa to St. John the Theologian. And, of course, even in Fiji, we're hoping to build a church to St. Barnabas. So we need financial support, but we're talking about a lot of money. I mean, to build a church in Tonga is going to cost us about $250,000, of which I think about $150,000 has already been raised.
Hmm.
But, you know, if you look at to see what we've done so far, we're not finished. You know, the building is undone. So I guess if someone wants to help through OCMC is the best and easiest way in the United States to help. Monies can be sent directly to Archdiocese in New Zealand, but I wouldn't recommend it. Much easier just to write to OCMC, or contact them by phone or by email and say, I want to support the work in Oceania. I want to help that work. And here's how I want to help. I wanted this to go to the orphanage. I want this to go to the battered women's shelter. I want this to go to build the Church of St. George. This to build the Church of St. John the Theologian. Or I just want this to help generally the missionaries who are serving there. And anything you give is going to be a help to us. We do believe that God is going to bless the work. The Archbishop has always stepped out in faith. He didn't ever know where the money was going to come from. Even when he's laying the foundation of a building, he doesn't know where the money's going to come to build it. But he steps out in faith, he trusts the Lord, and the Lord hasn't let him down. Sometimes we, his helpers, let him down. And I apologize to him for that, but he hasn't let us down, and the Lord has not let us down. So that's the kind of thing that if you feel called in your heart to really help the planting of a church in a place that hasn't received the full gospel of Christ before, we need your help. And if you don't want to help financially, or you can't help financially, certainly prayerfully address the Lord and pray for us. And it doesn't have to be a complicated prayer, but just mention in prayer, Lord, please bless those people who are serving Oceania and give them your strength and your courage and your assistance in every way. Send angels to watch over them, or whatever other words the Lord gives you. And then some of you out there listening, I'm hoping, are hearing my words today, and you know that I'm speaking to you. And you're saying, does he really want me to come and help? Yes, yes, we do. If you feel the call through this little ministry, the speech that we're giving here through Ancient Faith Radio, we would be happy to have you help. And you need to be a person of maturity, and you need to be a person of sobriety. And I don't just mean in terms of not drinking. I mean the deepest word meaning of the word sobriety, of self-control, not only of your body, but even of your mind. Those kinds of people are needed because it's a tough work. Anytime you go to do the mission of the Lord, you have to know that the evil one is also going to fight against you. But we don't have to acknowledge that, or we don't have to meditate on it. We just need to move forward in faith and know that God will help.
What kind of skills are needed if someone's listening and say, well, yes, maybe that is me?
Well, certainly we need help with the orphanage. So if you're good with kids, we'd love to have you. If you're a good administrator, you know how to handle a budget very well, we need you. Again, you have to like people. If you're good with books and you don't know how to like people, then don't come. But if you have a skill that you want to teach the children who are at the orphanage, and you think, well, I could teach them to do some handcraft or woodworking or even wood carving or something, but you'd probably have to help even to provide some of the tools that would be needed in order for that class to take place. Or you want to teach the young ladies to make things with cloth, to be seamstresses or some other, you know, in this very, very primitive culture there. So the skill level isn't going to be teaching them, you know, to build a web page necessarily, but anything that you can teach them. And there are kids who are bright. So I suppose even if you are good at web pages and you want to teach that, there'll be somebody there who can receive that, but they would never have put their hands to a computer. So you have to start at the very basic level.
Sure, sure.
And then of course, in New Zealand, we have our monastery there. So we need people who might have the skill set of being a monk and who really want to serve Christ in a life of prayer. We need that. But we also need people who maybe they don't want to be a monk, but they are good at taking care of the chickens, or they're good at taking care of the sheep, or they really are good at farming and they know how to build a good garden or a good orchard. Or even somebody who might have the gift of beekeeping. We have need for that. And we're also in a little bit of construction right now at our monastery. So we need people who can do finishing work, you know, putting up plasterboard and or jib board, they call it over there, and finishing off the interior of the building that we've constructed as an arkondariki, or a reception building for guests.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about, and I hope our listeners as well. And I'm sure they would like to know where they could find more information on the web.
Well, John has given me this opportunity to share with you the website, www.ocmc.org. And if you are on that website, it gives you an opportunity to support a missionary. And our name, of course, is Petitsis, and we are serving in Oceania. So if you happen to be, I've just joined the program, I hope not, we're coming to the end now today, but you'll find that there's lots of information on the OCMC website to tell you more about missions throughout the world of the Orthodox Church.